Welcome to Automating Protection and Recovery with DPM and the System Center Suite. And the best way to start a talk is probably with a demo. What I'm going to demo here is what I'm going to build throughout the rest of the talk. So in this case, I want you to imagine that in your organization, you have someone who has a particular workload. And in this case, in this session, I'm going to be talking about SQL. But this could be really any Microsoft workload. So in your mind, I want you to, it could be Exchange, it could be file services, it could even be, and this is very good for your consumerization of IT, a client computer. So you've got a guy or a girl who's gone and deployed a SQL database. Great, SQL database deployed. Now what if they want to protect that database? What can they do? Well, traditionally, what they do is they ring up, either there's already automatic protection on that SQL box, or they ring up the service desk and book a job. But what if they could do the following? What if they could go to a website? They could say, okay, I want to protect my database. I'll click on that job. They go to the request. And they say, okay, I know my SQL server name. I know my instance name. So I type that in. I know my database name. Are you ticket? And I have an understanding of what level of protection I want for the database. I can choose gold, silver, bronze. Click next. Click submit. That's it. That's all I have to do. Their database is protected at gold level. Well, sorry, bronze level. What if that developer wanted to export their database or wanted to recover their database? Now, they could ring the service desk and they could say, you know, I need to do a recovery on my database. But what instead if they went to a web page, they choose recover SQL database from DPM, they go to request, they specify their server name, they specify their database name, they click next, they click submit, and that's all they had to do. So I can come across here into Service Manager and refresh this here. Oopsie-daisy. That console's just got to spin up. And I can see that those jobs have been logged into Service Manager. Now, that doesn't happen instantly, but it does happen. So this is what we're going to be talking about, what I'm going to be talking about in this session. A complete change in the way that we think about protecting and recovering workloads. Now, is this going to be suitable for everything? No. But in a self-service environment, where you've got people out there deploying services, deploying applications, as in server applications, deploying workloads. What decisions do you make as an IT service about how protection is configured? Because we're looking at a new generation of very IT literate users in our organisation that know how to spin up an instance of SQL or know how to provision a database. And we give them all of the tools, all of this self-service that has been talked about, is giving them the tools to go and provision that. That's great. But what happens when it all falls over? How do you, as an IT department, make a decision about what you're going to protect? Or do you just say, let's make it all self-service, let the users make the decision as to what they're going to protect, and we will charge them based on the protection level that we give them. So rather than protecting everything, let's only protect the stuff that they've asked us to protect, and let's simplify the process of protection. So the agenda for this talk is why you still need backup in the data center, private cloud, and this works. Even though it seems a bit private cloudy, this works across the whole just even normal servers. The workloads don't have to be virtualized. We'll talk about systems and a data protection manager, orchestrator. We'll also talk about service manager. We'll talk about some private cloud backup workloads. I'll do some demos where we basically build what you've just seen using orchestrator and service manager. And we'll also look at verification, because it's one thing to know that a workload has been backed up, or at least to submit the request, but it's another thing to actually be notified and know that your workload is being protected. So if we think about modern data centres, who here is not running RAID on critical workloads? Anybody? No. Everybody's running. So who here can survive a disk? Everybody here can survive a disk blowing its stack. Everybody here can probably survive a network card going down. So one of the issues that's coming in, and we see this very much with Exchange. Now that Exchange has got these highly available database availability groups, people are going, okay, we've got DAGs. Why do we need backup? We've got these resilient servers. Why do we need backup? There is a reason that you need backup with Exchange, because, of course, a DAG only, if you delete an item from Exchange, a DAG has a certain lifetime. You can't go back further than at most 60 days or so. So in that case, you've got a reason for having that. But even though you've got a highly resilient, highly automated infrastructure, where if one server goes down, another server comes off, you've got VM failover, all of that, you still have data corrupting malware. Okay, we'd like to say that servers and clients are never infected with malware, but who here has never had malware on a server? Fair enough. The other thing is, I'm going to ask a fair number of questions. Now, those that are interested, I've got a number of these to give away. Anybody interested in taking the Windows 7 exam who answers a question, say when you answer a question that you want a book, and I've got 9 to give away. So I'm happy to give those away to anybody who answers questions. So has anybody never had data corrupting malware in their data center? Anybody? Okay. That's... Pardon?
No one wants the book.
No one wants the thing. My heart's broken. Unforced user errors. Now, an unforced user error is a simple way of saying that someone has messed up. Okay? Try as we might, systems administrators sometimes make mistakes. And sometimes they make fantastic mistakes. Sometimes they might be working for a very large bank, and they might use Configuration Manager to deploy a task sequence to all of the machines in that bank that formats the hard disk. Okay? It would be wonderful, again, to say that there are no unforced user errors, but we're all human. One of the big talks, they're saying, learn PowerShell. Why? Because if you're automating, you've got slightly less of a chance of messing something up. So a private cloud, highly resilient infrastructure is not going to save you if someone does something silly, stupid and regrettable. Now, has there been anybody here who has never made a regrettable configuration decision on one of the servers that they manage?
Never made one.
Do you want a Windows 7 book?
No, thank you.
I can see I'm carrying those buggers home. I had 120 people in Orlando come for those books. Oh, there you go. Okay, misbehaving applications. Applications are meant to behave well. But let's think about what developers are generally like when it comes to the issues of reliability in their applications. So again, you can have this beautiful, resilient infrastructure, and then you can have some developer who might not necessarily have dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's, and it goes and, you know, chews up the SQL database or something like that. So there are still great reasons to have backup. Even when you have this wonderful, resilient infrastructure, you still need to back stuff up.
Can we add one to that for a book?
Pardon?
Can we add a scenario to that for a book?
Yep.
About SharePoint server runs out of disk space and blows itself.
Hoses itself, yep. You want a book? Someone wants a book. Someone wants a book. Worst comes to worst, you can sell it on eBay. Yes. So you might have updates that go awry. Who here has deployed an update that they've had to roll back very quickly?
Yes.
Right, exactly. Cool. Now, who wants a book? Hands up for the books. We'll get rid of this now so I don't have to subject myself to more of this pain. I'll just go and get another one. They give you all of these books when you write them, and you're not allowed to sell them on eBay if you're the author. You're only allowed to give them out for promotional reasons. So, okay, so everybody's had an update that's gone wrong. So this idea where you've got people looking at their own workloads, that people are developing their own databases, if they can go prior to deploying their own update or knowing it's Patch Tuesday and take a snapshot and trigger a snapshot without ringing the service desk, that's actually a fairly useful thing. So the challenge of backup in private cloud environments is that when you allow self-service application deployment, when you allow people to deploy their own infrastructure, when you've got people with BYOD devices plugging things into the network. So this big dream is that we suddenly have someone who can ring up and say, hey, I want to deploy this. IT's provided me with the infrastructure and all of these virtual machine templates to go and deploy this stuff. It gets very difficult for IT to go and track all of the stuff that's in the environment. Who here is absolutely certain that they know of every workload that's running in their environment? Who here is pretty certain that they don't know? Exactly. Okay, so there is many situations where someone comes in and says, hey, I've lost this workload, and IT service desk's response is, we didn't even know you had it. So the idea is if you're allowing people to self-service provision this stuff, give them the tools to back it up or configure their own protection for it. Because self-service is in another way saying, hey, your responsibility now, not ours. You're not paying us, because they're quite happy not to pay IT. So you say, okay, look, you want to deploy these applications? Here's the backup service we offer. This is what it's going to cost you. You choose whether or not you use it, but it's like car insurance. If you get into an accident and you're not insured, not our problem. Now, with that also, not all self-service workloads need protection. There will be people who will spin up self-service workloads for projects that never go ahead, where they're just prototyping something. Now, in those cases, it might need protection for a short amount of time, and then not. And we've all looked at SQL servers where we're sitting looking at databases that no one's using anymore, but are still being backed up. So an idea is, in allowing users to choose which workloads to back up and then making them sure and understand that they're paying for it, you're going to get a much better rationalization of what's getting backed up in your organization. Now, who's responsible for determining whether or not these workloads are backed up? This is something else you have to think about when you start doing self-service provisioning in your organization. If you're allowing consumerization of IT, whose responsibility is it to make sure that the documents and settings on that computer are backed up? It's very easy to say, okay, it's the user's responsibility. But IT as a service comes across a lot better in an organization when they're doing this by saying, hey, yes, it's your responsibility. However, we offer this service where you go to a web portal, you download a client, and then you have your client backed up. So we can offer you self-service backup and recovery, and DPM allows you to do that. So again, it's the idea of users taking responsibility for themselves, but also the IT department empowering them to take responsibility for themselves. Now, to give you just a quick overview of DPM. DPM is like the quiet part of the System Center suite. When I was at MMS last year and they did the big announce on System Center 2012, they actually mentioned every product but DPM. However, if you are licensed for System Center 2012, if you're licensed for Config Manager, if you're licensed for Operations Manager 2012, guess what? You already own DPM. You just need to make sure that you've got the right client licenses. And if you've got ECALs, you're licensed to use it as well. So, and this is just something to keep in mind. We see down here Windows Client. 60% of organizational data, according to Gartner, is stored on client machines in an organization. So as much as we like to set up FileShare and SharePoint to get people to store stuff there, quite often people store stuff on their machines. The reason that this doesn't necessarily become apparent to organizations is that you only have a small number of machines die on a regular basis where you're actually losing that data. Now, to the organization as a whole, that's not really that important, or it doesn't feel that important unless someone who's really senior who loses their data. But to the person who's lost that data, that's actually a terrifying thing. With DPM, you can make sure that all Windows clients have just the documents that are important backed up centrally. And you can get alerts about it and things like that. And you can also provision that centrally, should you so choose. So DPM allows you to back up every 15 minutes. That's as quick as it'll do snaps. It allows you to do backs up to disks. You can go out to disk-based recovery, up to 512 snapshots. You can go and do an export out to tape for long-term retention. So you've got your 512 snapshots. Depending on how often you're snapping with DPM, that's going to vary how long your retention period is. But then you can go once a week and then do tapes and put them off-site. You can also use DPM out to another DPM server, and that DPM server can be hosted in the cloud. So cloud-based backup, I'm not sure if you've heard, with Windows Server 2012. Windows Server 2012 supports backup to cloud as a service that Microsoft's offering, but other vendors are also offering DPM to DPM in the cloud. So that's your ultimate offsite, rather than worrying about tapes. Now, who here has tapes taken offsite on a regular basis? Who here finds that process wonderful, joyful, and easy to run? Who finds it a pain in the backside? Exactly. So getting rid of tapes is actually a lot more feasible now. Why? You just back up your link. Now, your initial synchronization, yes, it's going to be big, but what you can do is most of these organizations offer you the ability to actually send your workloads as USB drives, they import them, and then you're only doing differential backups from then on. Yes?
Are these vendors active in Australia?
I believe you can use Iron Mountain, but I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, Iron Mountain. So Iron Mountain was the first one to really offer it. There are more coming online. Of course, if worse comes to worse, you can go and spin up an Azure instance, but you're going to be paying for all the amount of disk space that you're going to use. Now, in terms of scalability, in terms of what DPM does, DPM, one server, will support up to 100 production servers, up to 3,000 Windows clients, up to 2,000 SQL Server databases, up to 25 terabytes of SharePoint data, and up to 40 terabytes of Exchange data. And all you need to do is add additional DPM servers as you want to go. Microsoft, with DPM 2012, released a management pack for Operations Manager that allows you to manage each DPM server in your organization from a single pane of glass, and Microsoft manages its entire DPM infrastructure from, I believe they've got about 50 DPM servers. They manage it all entirely from a single Ops Manager console. So Microsoft manages to back up a substantial number of clients and servers running on DPM. And the story behind DPM, who here ever saw Jason Buffington talk at TechEd? Okay, one or two. So Jason Buffington used to be Mr. DPM before he left Microsoft, and he used to give the DPM sessions, and he's the one who got me to do further speaking on DPM. But he said that the reason that Microsoft built DPM was that they were looking at customers who were backing up and recovering their stuff using third-party products. So they were backing up and recovering Microsoft workloads. And they found that they were getting a 7 to a 15% failure rate, either in backup or recovery operations. And Microsoft's response was like, holy cow, if our customers are getting this response rate, if they're seeing, you know, that 1 in 10 backup and recovery operations are failing, we really need to do something about that. And there was reasons for that. So they brought out DPM with the intention at first to make sure that it backed up and recovered Microsoft workloads. With DPM 2012, there's a VSS provider that can be used by third parties that allows third-party products running on Microsoft to be backed up and recovered. And because DPM is a part of that System Center license, if you've got, you know, you've got Config Manager or you've got Ops Manager, you own DPM, a lot more vendors of applications are going, you know what, we'll provide DPM integration for our application because it's such a cheap product for people to do enterprise backup with. Now, Orchestrator is a new product. Who here has worked with Orchestrator? Who here knows what Orchestrator does but hasn't worked with Orchestrator? Okay, so we've heard a lot about PowerShell at this conference, how you can automate with PowerShell. Well, Orchestrator is automating with a GUI. You can take PowerShell and you can build it into Orchestrator. So you can make Orchestrator activities out of PowerShell commandlets, and then rather than sitting there going, I need to build this PowerShell script by typing these particular parameters and everything like that, you drag the tasks onto a workspace, you connect them up, and then you can run it that way. So Orchestrator is runbook automation. It's designed to work with every Microsoft product, and there's more and more stuff becoming available for Orchestrator. What we'll see in today's talk is how you can use Orchestrator to do all of the DPM automation. So rather than me having to know what the PowerShell commands are for DPM, to get DPM to go out, to get to a SQL server, to find a database, and to back that database up, I use an Orchestrator activity. I drag it on, and I'll show you how to do that. Orchestrator is, it's PowerShell on steroids, but it's PowerShell simplified so that it's able to be understood by administrators, because administrators, once a script gets beyond a certain length, tend to flick off. Who's here has sat and looked at a script that someone else has written and thought, this is way too complicated, I'm going to start from scratch? Anybody ever done that? Exactly, yes. No, well, that's the thing, because it's not human readable. Whereas if we're dealing with something visually, surprisingly enough, we can actually make better automation. At MMS this year in Las Vegas, the Microsoft guys on the virtualization team and the Orchestrator team built an automation that did a full data center migration from one site to another, migrated everything, and they built that in 50 minutes. So it's an insanely powerful tool for automation. The DPM integration pack, each product has its own integration pack, has these particular activities. So create recovery point, take a backup. Get data source, which means look at what workloads on that server can be protected. Get recovery point. I've taken all of these backups. Give me a list of all of these backups. Get DPM server capacity. How much space is left on this DPM server? Should I add and use that in your decision-making logic as to whether or not to assign workload to it? Protect data source. So protect data source says, okay, go out and do that, but don't create a recovery point. A recovery point is a backup. This is, say, go out and get this ready so it can be backed up. So you've got a recover SharePoint task that's designed specifically for recovering SharePoints down to item level. Recover SQL, obviously designed for recovering SQL. Recovering virtual machine, or run a DPM PowerShell script. So again, just type in the script properties. So the idea here is rather than writing a complex script to do a recovery where you put in input parameters, you drag some activities together and do it that way. Now, the other product I didn't talk about here was Service Manager. Now, with Service Manager also comes with the System Center Suite. Now, who here has deployed Service Manager in their environment? Okay. Now, who here has a job tracking system from another vendor? Who here has a System Center 2012 license or is going to get one in the next few years? Right, okay, so if you've got a System Center 2012 license, here's Microsoft's very happy to also give you a complete service desk application. But it's a service desk application that fully integrates with every other System Center product. So the example that they like to give with Orchestrator is that you can use Orchestrator to trigger Service Manager jobs from Operations Manager. So let's say Operations Manager notices that there's a disk space alert on one of your Exchange Mailbox servers. Orchestrator, that triggers an Orchestrator job. That goes into Service Manager. It creates a job and it says in Service Manager, right, we need to remediate this disk space problem on this Exchange server. Now, you have decided that the way to do that is to spin up another virtual Exchange server. Fine. So what Service Manager does is triggers an Orchestrator job that goes into Virtual Machine Manager and spins that up and deploys it to whatever virtual host has got enough resources. And again, Orchestrator talks to Service Manager, talks to Operations Manager, talks to Virtual Machine Manager, automating that entire process so that you can instantly have a new VM spun up, deployed, mailboxes moved across because it's all PowerShell, and then have that job marked ticked as done without requiring human intervention. The idea being that if you can make a process repeatable, you can automate that process. Every minute you spend automating a process is tens of hours you're saving yourself later. And that's this big push, why you hear the, oh, if you don't learn PowerShell, you'll be working at McDonald's. They're not really explaining why. Because what it comes down to is every task you're automating frees you up, but the most expensive component in IT is the systems administrator. Because they're not cheap. And the more that's automated, the less need there is for systems administrator. So where this McDonald's comment comes from is that if you've automated everything, okay, you're useful to your organisation because you know how to build the automation, but that guy sitting next to you who hasn't touched PowerShell, who won't learn it, you've just automated them out of a job. So that's where that comment comes about automation. Okay, so the first demo, some of these I've done as videos, some of these I've done as direct demos, and the reason is that some of it's quite complex. Also that anybody who's ever taken a course that I've taught knows that I use a lot of videos in my talk. But the benefit of it is when you're dealing with such a complex environment, it allows you me to show you a lot more in a shorter amount of time than I could if I was waiting for something to happen. So I'm also trying to minimise that. So in the first demo, what I'm going to do is I'm going to flick across here and show you how to build the push database into protection runbook in System Center Orchestrator. So that first thing I showed you, just the underlying bits and pieces of that. So where we start off is this is Orchestrator. I'm going to create a runbook. But before I do that, I'm just going to create a folder that will store the runbook automations that I'm creating. So here, it's easy. Create a new folder. Call it TechEd. That's straightforward. Now, within TechEd, what I want to create is a new runbook. Now, a runbook is your automation. It's like your script in Orchestrator. And, of course, I need to check that out because I want to edit that runbook. And I want to rename it so that it's got a meaningful name. So I rename it, put database into protection. Because what I'm going to do at some stage is synchronize that runbook with Service Manager. Okay, so now what we can see here is that I've got all of my DPM tasks and I've also got my runbook control tasks. So the first thing when you're building a runbook is that you want to pull across all of the tasks that you want to use. You can either pull them all across, as I'm doing here, by going initialize data, and then I'm going to pull across three of the get data source tasks, and then I'm going to pull across other tasks and then add them together. And in this case, this is just because I know how this runbook should look. And I'll explain what each one of these does as I go through and edit the process. So we've got initialize data, three get data source tasks, but they're all going to get different information. Then what I do is I say protect data source, and then what I need to do is create a recovery point. So in this first task, initialize, I'm linking them together and saying this runs into this, runs into this, runs into this. So for those of you who haven't used Orchestrator before, you can have branching logic where these go all over the place, but it's all about drag and drop, build a chain, make the chain go off in whatever direction needs to be there. In initialized data, I'm taking, building it so that I can put user input in. So I have three parameters of user input. The first parameter is what is the name of the SQL Server or the SQL Server instance that's actually hosting the database. Two, what is the name of the database? And the third parameter will be what protection level do I want to assign to that database. So that's all I have to do in that first one. So the next one is get data source. Now, what this one will do is it's going to get information about the protection group. Now, the way that protection groups work in Data Protection Manager is that you specify how often a backup snapshot is taken, how much space is allocated, and so on. So that's your protection level, is your protection group. So you pre-create those in DPM. So what I need to do is I need to configure that task to pull from the initialized data task the name of the protection group and then have that converted into the protection group ID that's sitting in Data Protection Manager. So here I say, find me protection group. I'm going to subscribe to the published data that's come from that initialized data task. And that's all I need to do there. So it can take, now, one of the things we'll look at later is we'll talk about naming those protection groups and why we use a drop-down list rather than having users type in. Because in this case, it's got to match what's there. Now, you can actually make this more complicated so that it uses Operations Manager to go out and detect all of the possible workloads so that all users have to actually do is pull down, say, a server name, and then it'll give them a list of every database on that server, and then they choose the one that they want to back up. So it's possible to do that. This is a simplified version. So the next thing is we've got protection group. The next thing is we need to get server information. We need to know the identifier of that server so that DPM knows what it's going to get. Now, in this case, to get this to work, you actually do need a DPM client on every server. But, of course, you can also configure a runbook that goes and deploys a client to a server. So here, find the server name, match that with the information that's sitting within DPM. Now, when you install the DPM client on a server, it does a full inventory of all of the backup items that are sitting on that server. So here, what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, we want database name, because when it inventories that client and it updates the inventory of that client, it will have a list of database names that all of the databases that exist on that server, as well as any other backupable items, such as system state. So what is going on here is I'm saying name equals published data, and the published data that I'm pulling is the database name. So the first item saying what protection group is it, what server is it, what database name is it. So this is providing all of this information to DPM in a version that it understands. So then what I'm saying is, okay, I want you to go out and put that into protection. So I can specify whether or not I want that task to occur later or to occur now. And in generally, with self-service stuff, you want to take a snapshot as soon as you can. So here I specify that I want to get the data source ID and I want to put it into the protection group. And again, we've specified protection group earlier. So it goes through and goes, okay, is that SQL bronze? Is it SQL silver? Is it SQL gold? It finds the associated identifier with that protection group and it actually puts that in there. Now, you can actually go further and provide optional properties where you go and filter things and say, okay, I want all replicas to be created at 5 p.m. But in the way I've done it, a replica is essentially created instantly. So then a replica and then create a recovery point. Do a backup snap. So put it into protection, prepare to protect it, and then actually go and make a backup snap of that so that a backup exists within DPM. So this is the first bit of piece. This is the underlying work that's going to go on. And now what I'm going to do in Service Manager, after I check this runbook in, is I'm going to synchronize this runbook into Service Manager and allow Service Manager to actually use this tool that I've just created. So that's checked in. Once it's checked in, what I can do is I can log in to Service Manager. So here I'm in Service Manager. Okay, so who here's used Operations Manager? Okay, so in Operations Manager, why do you create a management pack? Pardon? Yeah, to contain objects. So within Service Manager, you do the same thing. You create management packs to contain objects. So the first task I'm going to do here is just create a Service Manager management pack. So create management pack, and this is, again, this is exactly like it looks like in Operations Manager, and it's just a container. But it means getting rid of something is very easy because you can just delete the management pack and it'll delete all of the items in it.
These aren't pre-canned, like it doesn't know about a DPM management pack?
So there are other management packs that you can import, but in this case, what I'm using this Orchestrator management pack for, Service Management Pack, is it's going to host all of the infrastructure in Service Manager that's related to it. So what I'll be creating is I'll be creating a wrapper where I'll be wrapping that and connecting it to the runbook. And then a service request, and then a service offering, and so on and so forth. And I'm putting all of those into the one thing. And that's just a choice. Now, there are... With Service Manager, remember, it's a service desk applications. You can extend it out to do things such as application deployment, and really anything that Orchestrator can do, Service Manager can be made to do. And that's what makes Service Manager really amazingly cool, because suddenly you have a help desk application where you can have a full task resolution. So if there's a script that needs to be run, instead of, you know, the job ticket comes up, and if you know the job ticket just involves restarting a service, you can have someone press that within the job ticket and all of the automation goes in there. So in Operations Manager, sure, you can have Operations Manager restart a service, but have Service Manager hook into Operations Manager, automatically have the job logged, and then have the resolution within the service desk, rather than having to log onto the Ops Manager console and press that activity to get that to run. So that's sort of the idea. And that's where Service Manager becomes powerful, because it's really this insanely cool front end for Orchestrator, and Orchestrator can do everything. So you just click them in together. So once we've created the management pack, what I need to do is synchronize the Orchestrator connector. Now, what that enables me to do is pull in every checked-in runbook that exists in Orchestrator is now going to be available for me to utilise with Service Manager. You can also see that there's an Active Directory connector. There's also connectors for other... There's an Ops Manager connector. There's an SCCM connector. So if you want to do really advanced application deployment, self-service application deployment, you do it through Service Manager. You don't do it through Config Manager, because with Config Manager, you've just got people who can approve applications. With Service Manager, you can build an entire ITIL-compliant workflow so that someone requests an application, and then rather than Bob the administrator coming through and approving that, what you can actually have is that person's manager go and approve that, because then you can set up a whole charging infrastructure so that they've requested that application, they've consumed that service, they're getting charged for it. And of course, because it's a job tracking system, it makes sure that all of these automated jobs that may not get entered, because we know, okay, if it's an important job, we've gone to restart a service, or we've gone to fix a server or reboot it, yes, of course, we logged it. But what about all those small jobs that systems administrators do during the day? Are you like a lawyer where you log every minute? Or are there a lot of jobs that you do that you don't put in a job tracking system? So who here lets a couple of jobs a day go through? Yeah. Now, The problem with that is you're shooting yourself in the foot. It's like the old thing, you know, if you've got a great administrator, there's no problems with the network. But the administrator's not showing, if the administrator's showing, hey, I did this, because it's already automated to show all of the stuff that they've done, suddenly they're going from showing that they've done X jobs a day to much higher, and they're going, wow, yep, we'll keep that person. We'll keep them around because they're actually quite clearly doing stuff we don't know about, but the job tracking system does, and that's good enough for us. It also allows you to do reports on service SLA requirements and so on and so forth. So once we have got our Orchestrator Connector synced, what we need to do is we need to build some service manager infrastructure around that runbook. Now, the problem with Orchestrator is that it's got more wizards than Hogwarts. It's a very wizard-intensive product, or more wizards than Unseen University if you're a Terry Pratchett fan. So this first template I'm creating is essentially going to function as a wrapper around this runbook that we created. So here we give it a name. We say it's TechEd 2012, runbook, add SQL into protection. So when in future, after I build this, I'm referring to this runbook, I'll be referring actually to this template. So I can provide a description, but the class here is a runbook automation activity. You see that down the bottom there? And then we can put it into our TechEd 2012 management pack and click OK. So that's the first thing we've done. So when we do that, it brings up this runbook activity automation. The main thing here is to make sure that you click on this is ready for automation. If you don't do this, the Orchestrator runbook cannot be automatically triggered by Service Manager. And that's all that you're doing there. So again, we provide a bit of metadata, such as the title of the runbook. And once we've provided the title of the runbook, we then need to link that runbook to this template. So add SQLDB into protection. Again, provide useful names, not cryptic ones, because you've got to work out what this has done. And here, I select my request SQL database protection orchestrator runbook, which has come through from the connector. I click OK, and now I have created a service manager object that is linked to that runbook. But that's not going to give me everything that I need. So the next thing I do is I go and create another template, and as I said, there's a lot of wizards here, and this is why I've automated this, because Service Manager isn't the world's most instantly responsive application, for those of you who have used it. Sometimes it can sit there and wait for a few minutes before you get back. So this is a service request template. And in here, I'm going to put in the properties of how this runbook should be run. Is it a high priority task? And again, it's describing what's going on. So who here has taken an ITEL course or something similar? Okay, so Service Manager is Microsoft's implementation of MOF, which is basically ITEL. So all of these items force you into dealing with this in an ITEL framework. So it forces you to basically be ITEL compliant through the way that you have to do things here. So TechEd 2012 service request template. Now this is going to be for any of my requests, but I'm then going to link that runbook activity, and I'm specifying again a lot of metadata. What's the urgency, what's the priority, what's the area, who does it belong to? But what I really want to do is add the activity, and the activity I want to add is that add run SQL into protection activity. So we've done that. That loads that thing I've already configured. You've already seen this. It just loads it automatically so you can check it. Okay, we've done that. Now I've got two more things to do. We've got a request and a service offering. So we need to create a service offering first. A service offering is a category. Now, if you were using Service Manager for a lot of things, you'd have different service offerings. You'd have a data protection service offering. You'd have an application deployment service offering. In theory, you could build an operating system deployment server offering. So let me talk about that for a moment. Service Manager, eventually, who here at the moment uses Config Manager for operating system deployment? Okay, so when you're doing deployment, how do you decide what applications need to be on a user's machine? Is it a decision by the IT department? Hands up. Or is it a decision by that person's manager or that person's department? Okay, so they communicate to you and they say, hey, we need this, we need that. Imagine, if you can, moving away from a model where the service desk needs to be rung up when someone new comes to the organisation. Because it's not really the IT service desk who knows what that person actually needs on their machine. It might be that person's manager. It might be someone in human resources. How about, instead of having an operating system deployment image built by, I mean, obviously, originally it's going to be built by the IT department, but to meet a particular user's need, what if you had someone filling out basically a web form saying, yes, 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 you need that, clicking OK. So that's all the HR person or the manager needs to know. They don't need to be technical. They need to just click through a list. Instead of that list going to the IT department, which then fulfills it, you have service manager, orchestrator, and configuration manager go and build a customized image. So the only information that needs to be there is what's this person's MAC address, click the Ethernet cable in, put the computer down on the desktop, bang, customized image automatically deployed. Why? Because these are all things that can be automated. So you could use service manager to drive something like that. But that would be a different, obviously far more complicated than what I'm doing here. So here I've just added an image. I'm saying it's a data center request. When you are creating these service offerings, as you know, with ITEL, you spam them with documentation. You specify exactly what it's for, exactly what it's going to give them, exactly what it's not going to give them. So here's your service level agreement information. You might provide this to a link. Especially when you're talking about data protection, this is very important that you get service level information right, because people have got to know what they're protected for. It's like your insurance policy. How insured am I? If this happens, how much data am I going to lose? Because, again, in empowering them, you need to inform them. So we've published this service offering, and now that we've got the service offering, what we're going to do is create the request offering. The request offering is actually building the form that allows them to provide that information. What my server name is, what my database name is, what protection level I want. So here I could create request offering. Again, I get another wizard. At least I hope their staff has a knob on the end. I give it a title. It's a Terry Pratchett joke. No one laughed. You don't love my books. You hate my jokes. Sort of like my children. So TechEd 2012 request, put DB into protection. So you saw that I clicked on a service offering and I had three service offering, protect and recover, and also check. In this case, I'm saying, okay, well, this is the description. Request, put database into protection, and this tells them what it is. So if you've got a new user, someone who's not IT literate, they need to be able to understand what clicking on this does. This is where you provide all of this information. So I've put that, associated it with the service request template. Now, this is the web form that they've got to fill out. I provide instructions, and the instructions simply need to be, tell me your server and instance name, if it's not the default instance. Tell me the database, and tell me what protection level you want. And you might have a link out here again to say, this is what SQL Gold gives you, this is what Silver gives you, this is what Bronze gives you. So you configure the user prompt for information. First, server name. This has to match, these have to match what's in the Orchestrator runbook. Now, those two can be text. We can allow people to type them in, or we could have them populated on the basis of a query. But protection level, we know that there's only three levels in Operations Manager that we've configured, Gold, Silver, and Bronze. So what I do here is I say, make that a simple list, and I'm going to configure that simple list. Now, you could go Gold, Silver, and Bronze. You could go Awesome. You could go Rubbish. You can go, this will just get you by. But the idea is to come up with display names that are meaningful. Gold, Silver, and Bronze works across multiple cultures, which is why I've used it, because I've been presenting this talk elsewhere. But if you go 1, 2, 3, that suddenly becomes very confusing for people, because they might, or ABC, is A good or is C good? Which is the best one? Is the higher number or the lower number? So here we map the prompts. When you're making this determination, the trick is to look here and see that database is mentioned here and server's mentioned here. And so that means that that one's the list. So that when I come down and I click on this item here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to see which parameter. And you've got to make sure that this mapping is done correctly, because again, if you mess this up and you map server name to database name, it's not going to work. So here I've said database name because that says database, that says server name. So that means that this last one, it doesn't matter what order they're in there, that's not going to be how they're presented on the screen. They're going to be presented on the screen as it was back in the configure prompts dialog box. So here I then provide more metadata. Do I want to have any knowledge base articles? Do I want to publish that out to Service Manager? So once I've done that and I've put my offering owner as Oren, I go through my summary, I go through and my completion. What I need to do is associate that request offering and basically put it in with that service offering. So I do that, I go across here to publish request offerings, I locate my offering, I go add to service offering, and then I just click add. And then what we'll see is that when we fire up the self-service portal in Service Manager, we see we've got a TechEd 2012 service offering. So this is the one I used at the start of the demo, TechEd 2012 service offering. We see that we've got our put database into protection. We go to our request, and that looks exactly the same as what you saw at the start of the talk. So that's putting a database into protection. We also have pulling a database, requesting recovery. So rather than go through and do all the drag and drag and drag and drag, what we have here is here we have pre-canned, we have, sorry, I'll just... Here we have initialized data. So in this case, it wants its database name and server name. We want to get our server identifier. Wait a sec. Sorry. Okay, I'll leave that for a second. Why has that done that? Oh, okay, there we go. Cancel. Get server identifier. So here we've got production server, get the server name out of initialized data, get data source ID, so this is the name of our database, get the recovery point. So in what it does in this one is it gets a list of all possible recovery points that exist on the Data Protection Manager server for that particular data source. Now, if you were building a more sophisticated runbook, what you could actually do is you could have that request offering. So rather than going just recover, what you could say is no, actually, give me a list of recovery points, and then a person selects one of the recovery points from a list and then clicks next. So it is possible to build that logic into the runbook. The final item here is to recover SQL. So again, you can, using your initialize, give people an alternate recovery point so that they can choose to recover to a different location. They might want to, or you might want to set up a special file share that they can recover stuff on, and then they choose to do the recovery and then they just pull that data off the server. But here I've said C:\restore as the basis of where that's going to recover from. So that is what a recovery runbook looks like. So once you have done your you've put things into protection, once you've built your recovery, the other thing you need to think of is, okay, you don't want users going along and to check whether or not their stuff's backed up, doing a recovery all the time. I mean, recovery is something that you want people to do infrequently. It's not something that you want them to do all the time. So who here, okay, so who here actually uses DPM in their environment? Cool. Who here has ever used DPM reports? Exactly. Well, one. But they're basically, there's not much here, right? No. So if you've got users doing self-service recovery, you want some way of them to be able to check that their database that they've recovered has actually been protected. Now, there's a couple of things you can do, but DPM 2012 uses SQL Server reporting services. which means that you can go and use all of the functionality that's built into reporting services, such as emailing people particular reports on a regular basis, to actually inform them. So you could have an email sent to someone once a day, once a week, saying, hey, this is all of your workloads that's been protected by us. Because again, if you're in a self-service environment where you're charging them, informing them of what you're doing for them on a regular basis is a good thing. So we could run the DPM recovery point and see the recovery points in the last day or so. Now, those might not have gone through. I probably should have chosen all recovery points. But you can also see that that actually takes a while. And you've got all of these pages here where you're looking at what's been done. And this isn't very helpful for an end user, because to an end user, they're like, well, I've got no idea what that means. I want to know about my database. So the way around this is to use the report builder that's built into SQL Server reporting services. Now, this is where, who here has actually got a specific report building person at their organisation? Anybody? Okay, so you would get them to do it. But the basics are here, and all of the information that you need to know about the DPM database is here. So here is the data source. So we've got a connection to the data source. Here we have, I'll just let that go through. What it does is it goes out and queries the data source and says, tell me all of the tables and the views that you can allow me to see if I'm building a report. So it asks me for authentication. Because I'm logged in as administrator, I'm just going to go with that. And what we get here is all within that data source, we've got views, tables, stored procedures, and table functions. The one we want is recovery point disk. And the ones we want here is we want the name of the data source, we want the status, 0, it didn't back up, 1, it backed up, 2, something interesting has happened, some sort of errors occurred, and when the backup was created. So we say next, and then we get a couple of questions that we need to deal with in this wizard. Just give it a sec to come up. So it says, okay, how do you want your fields to be arranged? Well, what I want to have is I want my data source name here, I want my status, and then I want my creation time. The next one is, how do I want it shown? That'll do. Here I can choose a nice theme, should I so choose. So here we've got data source name, sum, status, creation time. To make that work slightly better, I can actually parameterize that and make this data source name. That'll be the prompt. And then have it query all available data sources so that it's only returning data sources of things that have been backed up. So I go OK, and then all I do in here is I delete that item there. I drag it across. Now to test it, I just click Run. It gives me data source name, asks me to select a value. So in this case, I can go down and say, OK, let's look at the Antarctica database. I click View Report. It goes on in the background, and it will go and hopefully generate the report of when the Antarctic, all of the recovery points of the Antarctica database. So what I can then do is go, great, I'm happy with that, and go call it TechEd AU report. I can then have my users come to my, give them the URL, and you can see there's my TechEd AU report URL. They click on that and then they can use that. So that's obviously very, very basic, but the idea there was to show you that within DPM, again, there's all of this information that you can extract about how successful or how unsuccessful jobs have been. And that is pretty much my session. So any questions?
Do you have any more books?
I thought you didn't want one.
I don't want one. You just got the green ones with you today?
Yeah, I didn't bring up the ones that are the size of phone books, no.
Got that one.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, thank you very much. Please fill out an evaluation.